Welcome back to Hit the Target, powered by Hollywood Bets. Today, we've got the scoop on who's hot, who's not, and the biggest surprises that are shaping the English Premier League title race as Liverpool and Chelsea go head-to-head at Stamford Bridge. Joining me in studio today is football analyst Jesse Nagel.
Dish, what an honor to be here. People who have been following us for a long time will remember this voice. Of course, making my return, excited to touch base on the Premier League. So much to look forward to this weekend. We've got a heavyweight fixture, blue corner versus the red corner. So super excited to see how that's going to unfold.
Let's dive straight into it. Liverpool's defensive frailties were exposed yet again as they slumped to the second successive defeat in the midweek Champions League action. The Reds had been bidding to bounce back from their last gasp defeat to Crystal Palace last weekend. What did you make about that performance from Arne Slot's men?
Yeah, well, look, for every problem, and you mentioned defensive frailty, you've got to trace it back to the roots. Liverpool haven't had a good game since they lifted the trophy in April.
Wow.
So not even May, when the season ended. Since they've won the league in April, when it was official and over, they just haven't looked great at all. And that's in all areas. So we can touch on the defensive frailties. They've missed, Salah's misfighting as well. The strikers haven't worked out. But, of course, on the defensive frailties, you know, we kind of masked it with the fact that they were scoring late winners, and the talking points were kind of... we were distracted, let's say.
The goals were plastering over the cracks.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I think even in the defeat against Arsenal, I think that's one of two clean sheets this season. Kirk is, I mean, people say he had a good game. I don't think he did. Their midfielder is their best right back. How can a midfielder be your best right back? And, of course, losing Trent last season, now it's to replace him with Frimpong. There's supposed to be... obviously not a direct replacement because of what Trent can offer, but the fact that a midfielder had to go in that position and is there and looks more at comfort or more at ease and more suited to that position than Frimpong does, I mean, I saw it coming, and now that it's happening back-to-back games, I can say I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I think that's a question for the Liverpool scouting department over there, because they never miss, but it looks like right now they've got it all wrong.
The last couple of windows, they haven't actually hit the market. I mean, Federico Chiesa, it's taken him, what, a season and some months to find his form, and now he looks like he's...
he was left out of the Champions League squad.
He was left out of the Champions League squad.
And I think now he's made a return.
Yeah, and I think the young boy Rio, who's, you know, come to fortune...
just signed his professional contract with him.
He seems like he's ahead of the pecking order for Arne Slot's men. So Arne Slot... look, I don't know if he's the one making the decisions for some of the transfers that are happening. Of course, he has a part to play in it, but I don't know if he's the sole decision maker in some of these moves. So you can see there's not utmost trust in Chiesa. There isn't that much trust in Frimpong. He hasn't been playing him, in fact, in his correct position.
I think he's been benched the last three games, actually.
Exactly. And who's the other signings? I mean, Wirtz is kind of forcing it to happen. Isak is, you know, didn't start the first game. In fact, when he was signed, everyone was anticipating his debut. He was left out of the squad, not even on the bench in that first game that he was supposed to play. So there's some question marks into how they're signing, some of the recruitment, the decisions going into it. I mean, we started at the top of the podcast talking about defensive frailties. You look at Florian Wirtz. They need his defensive skills because he's got, what, 8 clean sheets now?
Gosh. Okay, let's play devil's advocate for a moment over there. Liverpool had entered that fixture against Crystal Palace on the back of a perfect record. Five Premier League fixtures, 5 Premier League wins.
Yeah, it's look, it makes for good reading. But when you... I think football's harder than that. It's not that easy to just see the top of the table and be like, oh yeah, you know what, the table never lies. I think football's a bit more complex than that, and you have to sort of take a deeper dive into some of those results. And I mean, the term mark of champions has been often referred to when Liverpool, you know, scored their last gasp winner, which there's nothing wrong to if you're doing it, I think, at a once-off basis, or maybe once a month, twice a month, seasonally, or... but every game, not for me. And that's where I kind of said, you know what, let's scrap this mark of champions thought. You're actually scraping past matches, and you've got a favorable run to start the season, and it's helped him in the past to kind of build the momentum. But some of the challenging fixtures, and Crystal Palace was a telling test for them. How do they bounce back against Chelsea?
Yeah. Well, much like Crystal Palace did at Selhurst Park, Galatasaray continued to exploit Liverpool in those fullback areas throughout the match. I think it was Szoboszlai who was judged to have fouled the Galatasaray winger in that right-back position.
Yeah, look, Liverpool are no darlings of VAR in Europe. I mean, they've definitely benefited from some decisions in the Premier League, but, I mean, we saw kind of the opposite in the Champions League. So, yeah, perhaps that decision isn't given in the Premier League. Perhaps that's overturned, especially if Liverpool's involved. But, yeah, it's not good for Liverpool to lose back-to-back games in September. This is your Premier League champions. I see they're no longer favourites for the league now for in terms of the bookmakers' price as well. So bookmakers are not giving them a chance. I don't know how their fan base is feeling. Of course, I'm not emotionally attached to Liverpool. I'm in the opposite end of the title race. So, it's not good reading to lose back-to-back matches this early.
Yeah. You know, they've kept just 2 clean sheets across their last 15 matches in all competitions and appear to have real problems with their defense. Surely Chelsea will get something from this fixture.
It's such a strange one, Tesh, because, I mean, you look at one side of it and Liverpool don't look great defensively. And then you can also question that their attack has misfired. But then you look in the blue corner and it's, I mean, Chelsea have got 3 red cards in succession.
Yeah.
I don't know the correct stats behind this, but that must be some sort of record because I don't remember, and I've been following football for a very long time.
European clubs don't get red cards in successive matches.
But then, like I said earlier, every problem can be traced to some points. And we spoke about recruitment as well for Liverpool. With Chelsea, and of course there's what, like 60, 70 players to choose from, depending which window you want to talk about. But when you purchase so many players that are young and, let's say, novices to the game, very, I don't know what's the average age of Chelsea's squad.
Well, actually, they feature the youngest ever Champions League starting 11 in the midweek win against Benfica.
But that's what you're going to get. So with a team so inexperienced, they will make these kind of mistakes. Disciplinary action is something that you kind of have to learn from. You kind of have to get a few red cards before you know that it's not okay to go in with your studs up. You kind of have to look at the Declan Rice situation with that weird sending off for against Brighton when he stopped the ball or disrupted play when he just tapped the ball. I think it was 2 centimeters away from where it was supposed to be kicked. He's now learned from that. Now, Declan Rice is an experienced player. I don't know if Chelsea are actually learning from some of their disciplinary mistakes.
Who's the leader in that dressing room then? Is it the teenage prodigy, Estevao?
No, you can't even say that. Look, it has to be the World Cup winner, Enzo Fernandez. I mean, he's probably the most experienced, and that's why he's got the captain's armband. I mean, outside of Enzo, you're probably looking at Reece James. How often does he play football? He's always injured. I mean, he's probably the most talented defender, but you only as talented as, you know, your last game. And if you keep getting injured, then, I mean, I think he's one of the best right backs in the division, but you can't say that because he's barely fit. So,
well, it's going to be a massive campaign for him as he bids to earn his spot in that England starting 11 ahead of the FIFA World Cup.
And there's so many people who can get that spot now because, I mean, Livramento, Trippier, Trent, can't forget about him now that he's not playing in England. He's still top of mind. So Ben White as well. So, yeah, in terms of leaders for Chelsea, wow, Desh, I want to say no one.
Moises Caicedo.
Not a leader. No, I think he's gritty. I think he's determined to win the ball back. He's got leader-like characteristics, but do I see him as a leader in that dressing room for Chelsea? I'm going to have to say no.
All right. Let's look at the front line then. João Pedro has been banging in the goals for the Blues since he arrived in that big money transfer. There's also Alejandro Garnacho made a very controversial move from Manchester United to Chelsea.
Yeah, it's almost like he forced it. In fact, he forced the move, and funny enough, Man United kind of forced him out as well. So it was like a bit of a catch-22 situation. So it was a bit disappointing for him personally, not featuring what's it like, 2 weeks ago against his former club, Manchester United, in that defeat. But yeah, João Pedro, for me, I know what, we're 6 games into the Premier League season. I think he's been the best signing of the season in terms of all the players signed. How does that affect, you know, what Chelsea have done so far? I mean, they've had a very slow start to the season. A lot of people expected him to be dark horses in the title race. I certainly didn't, but that was the consensus around the footballing world. But yeah, João Pedro, he's for me the man to watch. I think if Chelsea have any chance of finding the back of the nets, causing Liverpool problems, stretching those lines for between Konate and Van Dijk, then it's going to have to come through João Pedro.
Pedro did play a full 90 minutes against his former club, Brighton, last weekend. Now, we know the Seagulls ran out 3-1 winners on the night.
Yeah, it's look, it isn't even place to rest him because Liam Delap is injured. Cole Palmer's not going to feature before the international break. Chelsea's creativity is João Pedro. And I'm actually a huge fan of Buonanotte. But, I mean, we spoke about the inexperience, the age of the Chelsea squad. Is this the fixture for a Buonanotte to feature in that number 10 role? João Pedro simply has to play 90 minutes now every single game. And Chelsea, look, he got a red card in midweek. It's not going to affect him this weekend. But they need to keep their heads. They need to rely on João Pedro. But then in saying that, it also makes them predictable and easy to play against for the likes of Liverpool, who just look at their Chelsea team and be like, let's just nullify João Pedro, and then it's easy as that. But look, time will tell.
Well, as far as pivotal players go, Mohamed Salah, could he come back to haunt his former employees? We know he's not having the season to remember. And, you know, being benched in that defeat to Galatasaray must make you feel that he is eyeing this one.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the track record to haunt Chelsea. He's done it before. We all remember that iconic yoga pose, Mohamed Salah at the bridge. He scored there before in both colours. So he knows what it takes to score in this fixture. Look, he hasn't had the best starts as well. It's such a strange fixture, especially to analyse, because you look at both teams and it seems like there's more negatives than positives. So are we setting ourselves up for a goalless stalemate? Certainly hope not. I would love it if Mohamed Salah could get a couple of goals. But in saying that, I hope not too many goals, because I am an Arsenal supporter, so there's that agenda that needs to be pushed as well.
You mentioned goalless draw. I take it that's your prediction for this weekend's encounter?
It's unfortunately not. I can't see how Chelsea hold their heads for a fixture like this. I think emotions could get the better of them, knowing that it's for Liverpool. Look, it's, in fact, let me actually pose the question to you, because they top of the table and they're 2 points clear of Arsenal, who had a fantastic start to the season considering their run. And maybe I'm just biased and I just think that. But for Liverpool, is this more of a must win than a must not lose? Because I'm struggling to answer that question myself.
I think Liverpool, it is a must win. Chelsea, there's a lot of instability, as you mentioned, over there. I think Enzo Maresca, from the day he's walked in, he's probably been under pressure to deliver.
I will
give him credit for delivering that FIFA Club World Cup and the UEFA Conference League. I know neither of them are really looked at as...
Well, he got top four as well with that. So
it's a good job. I'll give it to him. First season with a number of players. I do feel that Cole Palmer carried that team for probably 60% of their season. Some of their signings haven't quite worked out. Some of their signings have moved on to greener pastures. So it is a very chaotic club right now. And that's why I think Maresca deserves all the credits in the world. I think Mauricio Pochettino was there for a season and didn't do as good a job as Enzo Maresca did. But you know, that is a manager's duty in every sense of the word.
The players get results. But yeah, just in terms of this weekend, I mean, you asked for my prediction. Look, I can wear my heart on my sleeve and say Chelsea get something. But at the end of the day, I'm realistic and I think Liverpool win this one.
All right. Let's take a look at the rest of the fixtures this weekend. We're going to start with Bournemouth hosting Fulham. Now, we know the London outfit are not having a season that they predicted, or perhaps Marco Silva would have wanted. They're coming into this one in the bottom half of the fixtures.
Yeah, look, for me, Fulham have been a joy to watch. Certainly Josh King, one of my favourite players. I think that boy is going to go to the top.
Yeah.
He's going to be an international soon. If you haven't seen him play, remember the name. He's such a star. And every time I watch him, I just think, wow. You're playing in the black and white colours of Fulham for probably your last season. But yeah, for me, Bournemouth have been, outside of Arsenal, have been the best team to watch. Wow, like Iraola, oh my gosh, what a coach. He could coach any club in the world, I think. I think he's that good. Bournemouth are getting there. I've got them for a European finish this season.
They're currently in sixth, banging on those European doors if it weren't for Sunderland.
Antoine Semenyo.
Yeah.
What a player. So yeah, for me, Bournemouth win this one. I won't say easily, but a fancy opponent.
Yeah. Fulham did find a bit of form. I mean, you look at that victory against Leeds as well as Brentford. Mm-hmm. Of course, they lost last time out to Aston Villa, but it did seem like there was a bit of an upturn.
Yeah, I just don't like it when a team does that. Eh? When they have a good half of football, or let's say a good 60 minutes, and it just goes so south. I mean, we touched on Chelsea, of course, for the majority of this podcast, and they were winning against Brighton for, what's it, almost 2/3 of the game and surrendered it at the end. So Fulham did the same against Aston Villa, and we take the lead so early, have such a good performance. I just get put off quite easily when I see a team just go so far off the rails in such a short space of time.
Yeah.
So to concede goal after goal. Of course, credit to Aston Villa for that, but I mean, yeah, no, not
right.
For me.
Bournemouth to claim maximum points?
100%.
All right.
100%.
Next up, we've got Tottenham Hotspur up against Leeds United. Now, we know Tottenham required a late own goal to avoid a major upset in the midweek Champions League encounter against newcomers Bodo Glimt.
Yeah, it's interesting. And in fact, I don't want to say worrying times for Tottenham, because that's, I think, jumping the gun. But it's back-to-back stalemates now. And I think Thomas...
It was another last-gasp draw against Wolves last weekend.
And the fact that João Paulinho took his shirt off the way he did for a home draw against, what, the 20th
probably
place...
Relegated
20th place Wolves at
Wolves,
the time.
Yeah.
They're not mentality monsters, let's say that. But in terms of a Leeds fixture, do they have enough? Of course, the easy answer is yes. But I mean, you kind of have to predict on what you see. And there isn't enough confidence in me to say Tottenham win this comfortably. Especially Leeds. I mentioned Bournemouth, how impressed I've been with them. Leeds drew against Bournemouth.
Yeah.
So just based on that, I'll probably see another cancellation of the two sides. So a draw.
A draw on the day.
Mm-hmm.
Big point for Leeds then, I would
massive,
say, in their relegation, in their bid to avoid relegation, rather.
Massive points. And I mean, you ask the question, what does it mean for Tottenham then? What are their aspirations? Is it top four? Is it top six?
Is it the Premier League title?
Stop it, Desh. Stop it, behave.
Look at us. Speaking about title contenders, Man United are hosting Sunderland.
Oh, no. What have you done? What have you done? Man United host Sunderland.
On Saturday. And you would forgive me if I said it's a case of 14th versus 5th. But Sunderland are in 5th place and Man United are in 14th.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And what's even crazier is we came to record this podcast and I stepped into the studio and I see you've got a Man United shirt on. So to paint some visuals to our listeners, it's how are you feeling for this fixture?
Look, I wear the shirt with pride. But I won't
just
be wearing
the tears,
it on Saturday.
Yeah, it's such a tricky one to call, Desh, because Sunderland have looked so good. Granit Xhaka, I mean, what did I say? João Pedro signing of the season. If he
their
is,
leadership
then,
qualities.
Then,
this, yeah.
If he is, and we spoke about leaders as well. Granit Xhaka ticks all those boxes, so he's definitely one to watch. Scored a couple of goals against United in the past as well, in similar colours. So what
is he going to do it again this weekend?
Man United, man, I want to say they're going to win, but
It's at the Theatre of Dreams, and I also want to remind the listeners that it is the international break, so if there was to be a managerial change,
you've got
to think Sunday morning.
Yeah, that sounds like manifestation, if you ask me. But yeah, Manchester United, man, let's say they get the job done. There's very little confidence, and I mean, the listeners out there can kind of tell that from the way I'm saying it. I'd back Man United with your eyes closed.
Gotcha. Yeah. The bookies will probably favour you as well. Next up, we've got a London derby on our hands as Arsenal play host to West Ham United. Former Spurs boss Nuno now appointed at West Ham. Is he going to come back to haunt the forbidden rival?
Let's hope not. Look, Arsenal have looked very good this season. I've been very impressed with what I've seen. And the Arsenal fan base, there's a lot of frustration. And there was this term about Arteta needing to take the handbrake off. I think the handbrake was definitely down last week against Newcastle. You know, to get an equaliser so late and then not give up, continue chasing. And, you know, often we refer to late goals as luck, but sometimes you create your own luck by asking the question. And if you don't create those chances, you're never going to score. So I've been very impressed with Arsenal. I haven't been impressed with West Ham until last week when, in fact, on Monday night when they went to Everton and got a draw. It wasn't just a draw. There was so much more than a point because you've stopped
an impressive attacking performance.
Exactly. You've stopped an Everton team who were in great form. I think Everton were in decent form, especially at that new home ground of theirs. They've turning that into somewhat of a fortress. So it's... For West Ham to get a point, I was watching that and thinking, wow, you know what, this one could be another tough one, like it was against Newcastle for Arsenal. But
I mean, that's actually not the only tough game, because before that it was Man City, and both fixtures required last gasp winners to, you know, if I'm Arteta, I'm possibly looking at that as 2 points gained.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because when Liverpool do it, it's the mark of champions. When Arsenal do it, it's you scrape the match. So double standards are involved. Football's very reactionary. Football's very reactionary. I mean, I thought Arsenal are going to win the league, and what, we're still second. So second again, ole, ole. You know how the song goes. Of course, that's not my song to sing. That's a rival song, but... Yeah, I think Arsenal, too much quality.
3 points at the Emirates.
I actually fancy Victor Gyokeres' score. Yeah.
No surprise there.
Nope, not at all.
Next up, we've got Everton hosting an informed Crystal Palace with a massive win against Liverpool last weekend.
Yeah, thanks Crystal Palace for that one last week. You really, I mean, put a smile on millions and millions of faces out there. And of course, the Man United fans were happy because, of course, they don't want Liverpool to win it and get number 21. Arsenal fans will be naturally happy. So, and of course, your own fan base. Can't forget them as well. But yeah, I think...
The Selhurst Park Ultras here.
Yeah, flying high. The Eagles are flying high. But, wow, I really like both teams, eh?
Yeah. Well, Everton are winless across their last three outings. So you'd think if there was a fixture to try and jolt that squad, it's this one.
It's Everton at home. So they're turning it into a fortress, man. I can't see them losing there. In saying that, Crystal Palace to make it 19 games unbeaten, you know what that means? It's a draw.
So, gotcha. Yeah. Next up, we've got Newcastle hosting Nottingham Forest at St. James's Park. I mean, speaking about fortresses, the Toon Army is a different kind of beast up there.
Look, we say that, but I mean, the approach to some of the matches, and look, they haven't put in bad performances. Don't get me wrong. I think they've looked good in probably all the matches they've played this season, but they lost that last gasp winner to Liverpool when Rio scored his first Premier League goal. They did the same against Arsenal.
Now, I think both times they looked the better of the two.
I wouldn't go as far as saying that. I think possibly in one of those fixtures, but I think Arsenal were definitely better. You could say I'm being biased how I see it, but I think Newcastle were better against Liverpool, despite having 10 men, and then they go and concede at the last minute. Against Arsenal, in the game, you've managed to hold off a title-chasing Arsenal team to a draw. Just hold on. They couldn't do that. Does that make me question their mentality or weaknesses? It has to. But in saying that, I mean, there's two sides to every story. And you look at the Nottingham Forest playbook, and Ange Postecoglou hasn't won a game since he's there, and he's been there for, what, over a month now? Over a month and a half. So he looks like he could get sacked. I mean, you spoke about the international break. If there's time to make a change, it wouldn't be the shortest sacking, possibly. But I can't see Nottingham Forest getting anything out of this game.
Okay, so if Newcastle are to win, to win, is Nick Faltermonte going to score? Because I believe it's back-to-back league goals for him.
I like him, eh? I think he's a lot like Ekitike. He's a big, tall structure up top. He's very leggy, but it doesn't mean he doesn't know how to use the ball with his feet. Look, funny enough, he scored two headers, but I think he offers so much more to his game than aerial play.
Yeah.
And his link-up play is great. His ability to carry the ball, he's strong as well. I mean, he uses his strength and his physicality to his strength. So, yeah, I think he could score.
All right. Next up, we've got Basement Dwellers Wolves hosting Brighton. Mm. Now, it's very strange to see a club offering a manager an extension when they are on the bottom of the log.
Possibly preparing for life in the Championship. And in saying that, would the manager in charge be capable of bringing them straight back up? Of course, these are not things you think about after 6 weeks of football, but it is the reality. But look, we say Basement Dwellers, they'll be high in confidence after their draw against Tottenham. You know, does that kick their season on? Did their season start last week? I don't know. I think I've been impressed with Wolves away from home.
Yeah.
I think even in their defeats against Bournemouth, it took a late Bournemouth goal as well.
Yeah.
But away from home, I think Wolves are a much better outfit.
They're favored. Yeah.
But at home, I think that fan base, sometimes you get teams who love the club but don't like the club.
Yeah.
And you see with Chelsea's home form, I remember back in the day when Arsenal had terrible home form, better away form. Sometimes you need to play away from the pressure. And I think there's just too much pressure on Wolves right now. So I can't see them getting anything as well.
All right. Brighton fancy their chances at the Molyneux then?
100%. Yeah. Especially after last week.
Next up, we've got Aston Villa hosting Burnley. And of course, the Villains are flying high after their 3-1 win against Fulham last weekend.
Clash of the Clarets. It's interesting because, I mean, Aston Villa won great last week, but they won 3-1.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that was largely down to Buendia's impact sub off the bench.
Yeah, Buendia, and then I think it certainly sparked some life into John McGinn as well. They were taken off, McGinn was taken off in that match, so probably one eye on this fixture as well. So you argue that this is the more winnable game. Burnley haven't looked bad at all.
Yeah.
So, and of course, we've got our boys, Lyle Foster, up top, who's always going to be a threat. So, yeah, it's tricky. KG, I'm not wowed with Aston Villa just yet. That win hasn't won me over. Yeah, probably a draw in this one as well.
Not Burnley to fancy their chances. I mean, it is an away fixture, and we know that they were battered 5-1 at the Etihad last weekend.
Yeah, look, you... Sometimes we need to read more into it, and yes, they were battered, but there was so much grit to fight back and to draw the game at 1-1. I mean, Haaland scored two late goals. You end that game at, what, the 80th, late in the 80th minute, and it's a marginal scoreline, yeah, so it's 3-1. But anyway, you take no shame in losing away to Man City, especially for a newcomer in the Premier League.
Well, speaking about Man City, they're away to Brentford for the weekend's final fixture. Now, we know Thiago led the line superbly for Brentford, scoring twice in their impressive 3-1 win over Man United.
Yeah, I mean, Brentford have become the new set-piece kings, or should I say throw-in specialists, because, wow, they are such a threat. They cause Man United so much problems when they played. They've done the same against Chelsea. They've all the big boys they come up against, they really don't back down. And they go toe-to-toe and they in your faces and they want to intimidate you. And especially at the GTA Community Stadium, it's going to be such a raucous and, you know, hostile time to play Brentford. So
it is a season of transition for the Bees, and
it is.
I would
it
say
is.
it's a good job that Keith Andrews is doing, at least in the short term.
And of course, he's no newcomer to Brentford. He was, of course, a set piece coach, and I think it's quite telling because now that he's head coach, you see how great they are at set pieces. So who replaced him? Who's that guy? And perhaps he's the next guy to get the head.
The succession line is strong there.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And look, we can. Succession line is also, you know, quite a story when you talk about Brentford because they've lost a lot of their stars. I mean, Ivan Toney, what, a couple of years ago, Mbeumo in this window, David Raya the past couple of seasons, I think it's 2 or 3 years now.
As well as Wissa as well.
Wissa as well, yet to feature for Newcastle. We forgot to touch on him. Maybe he could play and score. Christian Norgaard, the captain. I mean, you lost your biggest leader as well. So there's, on paper, they should be relegated, but they won't back down, and I think they're going to cause a lot of problems this weekend.
Yeah, well, they're just 3 points shy from seventh place Manchester City, so perhaps this is the fixture to cap off what would be a great start to life in the post Thomas Frank era.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, and Manchester City, you kind of don't know what you're going to get from them because they go full throttle in the one game and then they go 10 men behind the ball in the next game. So what is Pep Guardiola's plan this season? Is it win by any means possible? Because I don't think he can do that. Is it stick to his plan A and get the best out of plan A and there is no plan B? We've seen him do that and that's his success story. But the fact that he's paying too much attention to the opposition, I think that's warning signs for a coach, and it's early signs of just Man City not reaching their aspirations this season.
It's going down at the G-Tech this weekend. Mm-hmm. Which side are you on?
Probably down the middle. I can't split them. It's Brentford. I love them to bits. I don't think they're good enough to beat Man City. In saying that, I think they're good enough to get a draw.
All right. Jesse, it's been a pleasure unpacking all things Premier League related with you. We're going to have to wait and see how your predictions play out.
I'm confident. And Desh, thanks for having me, of course. Yeah, it's what a pleasure to chat about the best league in the world. And come on, Arsenal.
From all of us in studio, thanks and goodbye.